things, and one of the games that I played when I was a teenager going to camp was Two Truths and a Lie. Did anybody else ever play that game? Two Truths and a Lie. And so I wanted to see how smart our 9 o'clock audience is here this morning, okay? So we're going to play a camp game called Two Truths and a Lie, and you're going to find out a little bit more about your pastor here this morning. I'm glad my mom's not in the room. No. So the way that works, it's three facts. Three facts about me. Two of them are true, and one is a lie, and you guys get to guess which one's a lie. All right, here we go. While attending Bible college, your pastor worked as a bartender, even though he wasn't old enough to legally drink himself. Yes. All right, one statement, all right? Second statement is, in my late 30s, I was playing basketball, saw a guy charging the paint, and I knew that I could stop him by stepping in front of him and taking the charge. The first one worked perfectly. The second one ended me up into the ER the next day. Two statements. Third statement, I once decided to race my Volkswagen Beetle against my buddy's parents' brand new Cadillac. And I totaled it. I ended up, the brakes failed me on top of the hill. He turned right onto pavement. I turned left onto gravel. And with the brakes not working, I landed on top of a barbed wire fence with fence posts that went through both of the tires. Windshield ended up into the field. All right, so here we go. Two truths and a lie. Two of those statements were true. One of them was not. If you think number one is true, while attending Bible college, Pastor Billy Holton worked as a bartender, even though he wasn't old enough to legally drink himself. Raise your hand. You think that was true? You think that was true? How many of you guys think that was a lie? How many of you guys think that was a lie? That's a mixed crowd, all right? Number two, in late 30s, playing basketball, ended up in the ER the next day. How many of you guys think that is true? Okay, a lot of you think that is true. How many of you guys think that's a lie? Okay, number three, I once decided to race my Volkswagen Beetle against my buddy's brand new parents' Cadillac. How many of you guys think that's true? Okay, how many of you guys think that's a lie? Okay, all right, well, that one is actually the lie. That one, I was driving a Volkswagen Karmann Ghia at the time. Everything else was true, but it was a Volkswagen Karmann Ghia, the ones that look like it's like a poor man's Porsche. And so that one a lot more rare, worth a lot more money, and completely totaled out. Well, isn't that interesting? Like all those stories pretty much were true, except for the one little thing, that one little change made it a lie. Well, that's what I want to start with as we talk about storms today. We're going to talk about weathering the storm because there's usually a lot of truth to what's going on. Right? The storm is happening, and all the enemy does is just twist just something small, and we believe that as if it were true. A lie believed as if it were true will affect you as if it's true. And so today we're going to identify some of the lies so that, like when you're going through a storm, that when these lies pop up, you don't believe them. Because if you believe them, they're going to affect you as if they're true. And so three lies we believe when life falls apart and the storms are going on, and we'll talk a little bit about the truths that can save us, okay? So that story, though, about the wind knocking, like the guy just lowered his shoulder and just went back. Like the first time he realized what I was doing, after the second time he realized that I was stepping in the paint and stopping him. Well, he lowered his shoulder and just picked me up right here and just bruised the entire section, so much so that urgent care sent me to the ER because they thought something had punctured something. Like, it was ridiculous. But I don't know if life has ever knocked the wind out of you, whether it be in basketball, or the fact is that can happen through a text message, right? That can happen over dinner. That can happen with a doctor's diagnosis, where all the air leaves the room and you don't feel that you can breathe. It can happen with a job loss. It can happen in a marriage, where everything just, all of a sudden, you're shook. The storm has hit. And you don't just get soaked, you get lied to. And the first lie That many times when we're walking through storms, that we, and I put me in the category of we when I say that, by the way. I'm not like my wife who says, we are going to repaint the deck this weekend, right? Like, no, that's not the case. I am going to repaint the deck, and she's going to cheer me on. She may bring me a glass of lemonade. Like, oh, we get to do this. We get to build this wall. I'm like, nope, we get to redo this bathroom. No. And like all these types of things, we, but she helps out on a lot, so. But the first one, the lies we hear in the dark that sound true because many times they echo our fear. So in the middle of the storm, in the middle of the text message, in the middle of the diagnosis, in the middle of the layoff, this is something that science confirms, actually. Science actually says, I pulled up the article, and it may be hard for you to read, but it says, does rejection hurt? An fMRI study of social exclusion. See, when we experience emotional or physical pain, the brain activates an area like the anterior insula. Sorry, I'm not that guy. And the anterior cingulate cortex. Still not that guy. The same regions involved in the processing of social rejection. In other words, when we're hurt, our brain actually magnifies the feeling of isolation. And that first lie is that nobody cares. You're all alone in this. Well, and we believe that. It filters life through a survival lens that often assumes the worst. But just because you feel alone doesn't mean you're alone, especially not with God. Peter talks about this, and he says, for the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayers. See, the fact is, our brains are going to tell us that we're alone. The fear is going to tell us that we're alone, because that is what we fear the most. Think of the time that you assumed that nobody cared about the storm that you were going through. Then somebody showed up. That moment is proof that God sees, that God hears, and God cares. Line number two is that I can face it alone. This storm, I got it. I can handle it. That's why I didn't go to the ER till the second day, right? I got it. Yeah, it's all red and black and blue, and I got it. I can barely breathe. It feels like my ribs are puncturing into my lungs. I got this, right? Happens to us men in particular, right? Picture a stormy sea. You're in a rowboat that just hit a rock, right? Now you're the one that's trying to patch the hole, hoard the oars, navigate, and call for help all at the same time, right? I got this. I got this. I can handle this, right? Somebody, no one's there, right? We think we're all alone. We think we can handle it. I've got this. Isn't that what pride says? That I've got this. It's my way. I'm going to figure this out. This is the way I want to do it. Pride always sinks you. Humility says, God, I need you, and I need others. So Peter, in 1 Peter 3, verse 8, he says, sympathize with each other. Love each other. Keep a humble attitude. It's not all about you. One of the most, I think it was Angela that showed this to me, that pride and anxiety have the eye right in the middle. Because we think we've got to have it all under control, that we can face it alone. That we've got to. And you got to move that eye to die to yourself. Vanessa Van Edwards teaches that when people are vulnerable, that we're drawn to them. Vulnerability actually builds trust and makes connections possible. It's not weakness, that's human design. And so instead of saying that we can face it alone, we get humble and we invite a rescue. Pride invites just sinking. But humility invites somebody to save, right? Have you ever tried to save somebody when they're drowning, right? The first thing you're trying to do is calm down, because if not, their arms are going to flail around and knock you out. The number one thing that they taught me while I was a little Boy Scout trying to learn, get my little first or my lifeguard badge, they're like, you calm them down. You try to grab them where and make sure that they're not going to take you with them. Because they're in a panic mode. It's not our job to face it alone. Lie number three is that it's too late to ask for help, right? Isn't that what storms do? The storms are going to lie to you. They say that time is up, and God says, my grace is not on a timer. But 1 Peter 3:14, it says, do not fear the intimidation. Keep a clear conscience. They'll end up realizing that they're the ones who need a bath. That's like the NASB in the Message version. See, some of us delay asking for help because we don't want to appear weak. Kind of back to the pride a little bit. Others delay because we're ashamed that we got in this mess in the first place. Because sometimes we're the ones causing our own storms. But as long as there's breath in your lungs, you can call out to Jesus. He's already listening. He's already ready to turn his ear. So you're never out of time with God. It's never too late to ask God for help. My thought is, don't wait because his principles help you avoid more storms than you already know. So as we're weathering these storms, those lies, it's not too late to ask for help. It's too late to ask for help. I can face it alone and no one cares. See, when we're walking through these storms, though, we gotta make sure we know who's in our boat, right? Because who you let in the boat really does matter, right? If you're there and if the marriage is rocky and you're at work and you're talking to everybody and all the Debbie divorcees that are there and have been divorced five times over and that's who you're getting advice from, all because he stole your coffee mug? Right? Like is that really who you need to let in your boat? See, 1 Peter 3:10, and he knows a lot about these storms, and that's why we're looking. It says, the one who desires life must keep his tongue from evil and turn from it. Seek peace and pursue it. See, emotions are contagious. Science shows that just being around someone who is calm helps lower your stress. Somebody who can just sit there and listen and not engage and get all worked up and, oh, we got to do something about this, right? Who can just listen to your story? That's going to help lower the stress, lower the anxiety, just because they know how to listen. When you're trying to survive a storm, be careful who you let influence you. Don't let foolishness from others determine your faithfulness in the storm. So who we let in our boat really matters. We can't believe the lies when we're weathering a storm. But the third thing to know while we're weathering these storms is that storms are more manageable in community. They really are. I think Miss Engel, when you had the eye and the procedures and there was the diagnosis and we were able to connect you with Miss Angela, and you guys became best buds, and you're driving to the doctor and just telling stories and swapping eyeballs. Like all types. It was weird, weirdest connection ever. Like, but both have prosthetic eyes. Both have walked through this storm. But when they found out that each other had that, they were able to walk together in community. They were able to realize that they weren't alone. I guarantee you that the storm that you're walking through right now, somebody in this room has faced. Somebody in this room has been able to stand in the middle of that storm. Somebody knows how to walk with you in that storm. That's why I know we went through the whole Pain to Purpose series. We have a Pain to Purpose team. Angela's one of the people. Don's one of the people. My mom's one of the people. I think Cecily's in the middle of the training and stuff. There's a couple others, I believe. You're going to be hearing their testimony on the screen. Not today, but as we continue to prep for, because we're going to have a group that's ready to walk through the storm with you. Come this fall, the Pain to Purpose course is going to be available for those that are ready to walk that journey, to know that you're not alone. That the pain that you faced is real. But so is the purpose in that. The purpose for that is there to be discovered and there to be found. See, storms are more manageable in community. 1 Peter 3:8, he says, love each other as brothers and sisters. I know you think of your brother and sister at that point in time, right? And you're like, I don't know, right? I look at Liam and Luna, and many times there is love. Many times there is a sibling rivalry, right? And so we do have to recognize that that can take place even within the church, that sometimes the brothers and sisters may be annoying brothers and sisters. But it's still a choice that we make to love them. Unconditionally. We may not always like them, but we get to choose to love them. Galatians 6:2 says, share each other's burdens. See, last year I got to take a raft down the Wabash River with a group of sixth graders. Yeah, it sounds great, right? The raft down the Wabash sounds great, but with five other sixth graders, it was a mess. It started off bad because like we were the last team, right? They read off all these names, and our instructor had one like an alphabet like towards the end, and so he was the last instructor. So we have the last of the teams. Then we end up having an odd number of people, and so the weight distribution is going to be off. They have more people in their teams than we have in our team, and so all the little boys, they picked up on that and they noticed that, and why do they get more people? Why do they? It start before we even got in the raft. It was ridiculous. Everyone, by the time we're sitting down, everybody wanted to row their own direction. Wanted to go their own speed. Some were wanting to win, and others were just wanting to see whatever they were looking for. Everybody thought they knew what was best. But once we listened to the instructor, decided to row together, we took over first place, took over the lead, and we're all row, 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 and we're just flying by everybody, and it was a whole group of sixth graders, and so some are just doing circles over and over. But sometimes the storms in life cause us to do that. But when we listen to our instructor, when we take his words and say, okay, I'm going to intentionally put these into practice. You know what, maybe you're not here today because you have a burden or because you're walking through a storm. Maybe you're here to be the eyes and ears for those that are walking through it. And to listen to people's stories and not just say, hey, how you doing? Oh, I'm good, right? But for the person that's really actually choosing to be honest in church, that says life really sucks right now, you lean in and say, tell me more. Because that may be the moment that you realize that you've gone through that storm and that burden, you're here today to help carry that burden because you slowed down. Because you took time in the midst of the busyness. See, we weren't designed to go through hard times alone. Community isn't just conforming, it's strategic. When you have people that are praying, that are showing up, that are helping hold up your arms, you're building a spiritual stamina. Some of you that want that also have to realize you have to give that. That whole reap what you sow. I was under that whole type of thing, starting off in ministry as a lead pastor, planting a church. I'm like, God, I just want a mentor. I just need somebody to help me. I just want somebody that will just pour into me, take me under their wing, and just love on me. That was me in my car one day. And then he said, who are you doing it for? What part of you reap what you sow, don't you understand? Some of the thing we're asking God for is the thing that he's telling us to actually be doing for others. And that when we put those seeds into the ground, it comes back. It comes back. We actually reap what we sow. See, community isn't just about conforming. It's strategic. You're choosing to lean into conversations. You're choosing, well, I just don't feel welcome. How much are you welcoming others? How much are you caring others? There's so many people that, well, I just don't feel like I'm being discipled. Well, are you discipling anybody else? Are you pouring into others? Have you signed up to serve and disciple even the next generation? You've gotten involved. Have you connected in a connect group? I got a repeat after me moment built in here, right? This might involve you maybe getting a little bit uncomfortable, right? Because this is going to be where, like, you look around the room, right? You see who's in the room with you. Why don't you go ahead and try it? Why don't you go ahead and try it? Let's see. Like, oh, hi. Hey, Tandy, Candy, how you doing back there? Okay. All righty. That's good. Good to see you. All right, you know everybody in the room? You may not know everybody in the room, right? Like that's the thing. Like sometimes it's just like you walk into a church on the first time, right? And you're like, I'm all alone, right? Don't you know there's probably people that are like that today? I encourage you to scan the QR code in front of you, text the word connect, or fill out a connect card today, and that helps me know that you're here because I don't get to interact with everybody. But you know what? The person to your left and your right, they should be interacting with you. If you've never seen them, not that slide. But now that we've looked around the room, everybody repeat after me. This is your lifeboat. These are your people. We row together. Let's try that again. This is your lifeboat. These are your people. We row together. Let's try it again. This is your lifeboat. These are your people. We row together. Do you notice the rhythm in that? Of us deciding, you know what, we're going to row together. This is your lifeboat. These are your people. Come on, you guys are better than fifth graders and sixth graders, right? These are your people. We rode together, right? That was the way me and the instructor could get all these little fifth and sixth graders to row, right? Do we understand when we're walking in week after week, making that decision? Okay, I'm coming back from the camping trip because this is my lifeboat. These are my people. We rode together, right? And that's what I would even encourage you. Those of you that are here at the 9 a.m. service, make this your 9 a.m. service because these are your people, right? Don't just like, okay, sometimes I come at 9, sometimes I come at 11, sometimes I come at 6 p.m. because they have ice cream. And that one, I know, like, but, and that one, I mean, we are at 52% of our goal on average. Our goal is 67 people in the 6 p.m. service, and we're at 52% of that, and so that's an average of about 35 people. But even those 35 people are starting to row together. They're starting to get to know one another. That's right, really why we're doing ice cream at the end of the service, so that they can rub shoulders and talk and figure out whose favorite flavors and all those types of things, right? Which toppings they like. And it's saying, these are my people. This is my lifeboat. We row together. And being dedicated to that. Studies show that it was even like pre-COVID that the average church attendance was 1.3 Sundays a month. That was the average church attender. That was the members of the church. They attended church 1.3. Some of you, you know you're above average, right? In everything in life. But some of us, it's never going to be, this is my lifeboat. These are my people. We row together. If it's, sometimes this is my lifeboat. Sometimes I'm going to, hey, how you doing? Right? But no, when you're rubbing shoulders, when you're serving together, I mean, some of these teams like really love each other. They know each other. They get each other. They celebrate one another. Like they're sending each other, like I know teams that their leader sends them Starbucks gift cards on their birthdays. And when there's things that are going on in their lives, they make sure that they have meals because there's surgeries or babies being born or like there's people taking care of others because these are my people. This is my life, folks. We row together. That's why our mission statement is that we exist to connect. And it just doesn't say to connect to our unique purpose. It says to connect others. Because we don't do this alone. We exist to connect others to their unique purpose. Many times when we're connected to others, we discover our own. When we're disconnected, we're disjointed. Back to the storm. The fourth thing when we're weathering the storm is that God doesn't want you to live in the ruins of your storm. Matthew 7:24-27, Jesus talked about the rains came, the winds blew, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. If you ever say, I don't know if you have ever said hi to somebody or if you ever said, how are you doing? And they're just like, well, I'm surviving, right? Maybe you've answered that, right? And sometimes that's all you can do. But what if we leaned in? Are you ready to change than just surviving? Than just keeping your head above water? I've been there. I've done that. Financially, spiritually, in marriage, in life, the goal isn't survival. Maybe in the midst of the storm, it's survival. But what about rebuilding? What about restoration? What about resurrection? I told you guys there was a season in my life where money felt like a storm, that it wouldn't let up. It was paycheck to paycheck. It was paying credit cards off with credit cards. Then the storms hit even harder as everything was maxed out. The late fees started coming, and honestly, I was hoping, right? Well, God help me win the lottery, right? And he didn't answer that prayer. I don't know why. Or it wouldn't fix itself, and no matter how hard I pray. And that's because sometimes, I believe many times, we have to behave our way out of something we're behaving our way into. Sometimes it's behaving our way out of the storm, not just praying our way out of the storm. But there's changes that we have to make, disciplines that we have to make. I convinced myself that I was surviving, right? Because you know, those credit card companies, they send you those blank checks to pay off, right? To transfer balance. And there was that particular night sitting in the kitchen, surrounded by unopened bills, hoping to get yet another blank check, opening up envelope after envelope. And there was no way out at the stack of the envelopes. And I believe no one cared. I believe that I could handle it all alone and that it was too late to change. But while on a tear-filled drive to the bank to try to get one of those debt consolidation loans, Couldn't listen to the positive, upbeat music, Christian music that was playing on the radio. I pressed seek and heard this very nasally, annoying talk show. Talking about Financial Peace University. And it was Dave Ramsey. He didn't sugarcoat it. He gave it to me straight. He talked about baby step number one, and the debt snowball, and the financial freedom that comes when you tell your money where it's going instead of wondering where it went. And I started doing it. We cut up the credit cards. I took on side jobs. I sold everything that wasn't bolted down and built a budget that told the truth. And told my money where it needed to go. It didn't happen overnight. I think it was about 9 months from getting out of car debt to paying off credit card after credit card after credit card, and slowly things began to shift. The chaos started to look like peace, and what used to be panic started to feel like purpose. And that day I made the last debt payment, I cried, not because I had the extra money, but for the first time in a long time, I felt free. And that's when it hit me that the goal was never just survival. There's a rebuilding. There's a restoration. There's a resurrection. That God didn't want to just do it to me. He wanted to get it through me. He wanted to rebuild me through it. Now, I live in a home that's 92% of the way paid off. Completely debt-free. You know what? Our hearts are freer too. There's not a wondering where and a when and a stress and an anxiety of can we buy, why and how and when and if only we could. And I've been able to help others find that same freedom. So today, if you're drowning in a storm, if the rains are there, the winds are there, don't believe the lie that you're stuck. Don't believe the lie that you're all alone. It's not too late and you're not too far gone. Because God is in the process and the rebuild is always stronger than the ruin. Ephesians 4:20 says, "Now all the glory to God to accomplish infinitely more than we might ask or think." See, the final part of weathering the storm is that your storm story isn't just for you. It's what Peter got to by the time he gets to chapter 4. Don't worry, we're not done with 1 Peter yet. But 1 Peter 4:7 through 11 says, "Most of all, love each other. Be generous with different things that God gave you. So all get in on it." See, you're not the main character in your storm. God is. Your testimony, that's the lifeline for somebody else. So what if we were willing to share our storm stories? Storms that we've been through, or maybe that we're walking through right now. What if we were to share our storm story this week with someone who's drowning and offer what God gave us in the midst of our storms? Whether it was the peace, the prayer, or even the presence of others. Because once you've been rescued, you don't row away. You row back to pull somebody else in. The fact is, storms are inevitable. But shipwrecks, they're optional. You don't have to keep following the wind and the waves. With God, it's never too late. You're never alone, and you're always loved. If we're building our lives on the rock, surrounding ourselves with godly people, never believing the lie that it's just too late. You may be sitting here today feeling like your storm is too much. Maybe you've messed up, Aaron. Too bad. Or maybe you feel like you've waited too long to reach out. But let me remind you one more time that God's goal isn't just survival. It's rebuilding. It's restoration. It's resurrection. It's not just a financial one. It's not just an emotional one. It's spiritual. And maybe that is what's missing so far in the life. You're saying, I got this. I got the friends around me. I got the people in my boat. But there's never been a spiritual surrender. Inviting God into the situation. Inviting God not just into the storm, but into your life. The storms have pulled you so far off course. And today you need an anchor that holds. The anchor that doesn't wait for you to get it all together. The one that you can come, no matter who you are, no matter what you've done. That you can leak up to Him when everything else is falling apart. He just waits for you to call out. And that starts with a simple surrender. Maybe you're here today and you're ready to stop surviving the storm alone and start building your life on the rock. Would you pray with me? Let's bow our heads. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for those that are here today that are ready to look to you and only you and what you've provided for them, the body of Christ, the church, to walk with no matter what storm they may be facing. But first and foremost, we need to build our lives on you, to put our trust in you, to invite you into our storms and our life. If you're here today and you've never done that, or maybe you've, like I said, walked away, and it's time come back to shore. Time to return to Jesus. Would you pray this prayer? We'll do a simple repeat after me, and I'm not just asking you to pray with it. I'm asking everybody to pray this prayer in the room. Because like I said, we don't do it alone around here. We're together with each other on the journey. So I ask that the people around you pray along with you. Would you repeat after me? Jesus, I need you. I've tried doing life my way, and it's led to pain, sin, and storms I can't handle. But today I surrender. I believe you died for me. I believe you rose again. And I believe you're the only one who can save me, who can forgive me, who can change me, and be the foundation of my life from this day forward. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Church, would you put your hands together for those that just prayed that prayer?